you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
Hi, this is Jeff.
Hey Jeff, Stefan, how you doing?
Stefan, how you doing?
Oh, hold on.
Wow. Are you there?
Hey, Jeff, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
All right. Yeah, we put the new piece of hardware in here, and then, I don't know, it worked great recently in the test, but whatever. It's all right. Life happens, man. The paranormal, Jesus, the UFOs, they're working against us, bro. So, Jeff, I was just talking a little bit about, you know, We do a lot of stuff over the years I've been doing the show, and we cover a lot of the gamut of paranormal. You know, we get lots and lots of ghosts, of course. We've done Bigfoot. We talked a little bit in the beginning about UFO sightings and stuff. You know, and it's one of those things. When I got into the paranormal back in the 90s, people were just like, "Oh, you guys investigating UFO sightings and stuff too." And I never wanted to overlap those things. I just wanted to focus on ghosts and stuff. But here's the funny thing about it. Over the years of investigating and researching ghosts, like haunted houses or private investigations, we've come across some strange things in our photographs and in our videos. And I swear, they look like aliens. Like things we can't explain. I've got mysterious lights, and I swear, strange things landing in backyards. I mean, I saw, we got a video of what looks like, remember Kazoo from the Fred Flintstone show?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Kazoo from the Fred Flintstone show, like the Flintstones,
the little green alien guy.
It looked like a series of these tiny little ships coming, and one landed in a backyard of an investigation we were doing. And it looks like it has like little rocket things on the side. I mean, it was just crazy. I mean, I'm just trying to like understand what's going on. But
yeah,
a good friend of mine is Dr. Yeah, and I've got a good friend of mine is Dr. Barry Taft, who's a well-known paranormal investigator, and he talks about that as well, saying, "Hey, well, there's ghosts, but UFOs can coincide with that as well." And I'm like, really? Because he wrote the book Ghosts Below and UFOs Above or something like that, Aliens Above. And it was interesting because he says there's a lot of that happening. I've done a few historical places that have ghosts, but they also have photos of aliens at their location as well. So that's what's great about having you on the show. And especially with the Pentagon releasing that information, those three videos, it's all coming around. So it's great to have you on the show. You can give us some insight on that. But let's talk a little bit about your history. How did you get involved in the UFO stuff? I mean, what got you into that?
Well, you know, that goes back as far as when I was a kid. You know, I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. And, you know, I've always seen these orbs in the sky, these white orbs, these, you know, now known as what we call the Phoenix Lights. I've always, you know, witnessed these things ever since I was a boy. And, you know, going to school, I think I was in like the fifth or sixth grade at the time. You know, I was telling my little Native American friend, I was like, "Dude, you know, did you see that light in the sky last night? Wasn't that neat?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah, you know, my grandfather says that those lights live in the mountains out there." And he points out to the west side of Phoenix, Arizona, to the White Tank Mountains. And, you know, you're a kid at the time. You just, you know, not really. You just kind of blow it off, and your attention goes somewhere else. But over the years, you know, you start seeing more and more and more of them. You know, it doesn't matter where you go, there they are in the sky. And, you know, finally it hit me, you know, like, I think I really started, you know, watching them back, you know, probably in 1999. I was outside of my friend's backyard in Phoenix, Arizona, and this white cigar-looking thing started heading towards me in the sky. And, you know, when you're watching this thing, you know, you just say, ah, because you're trying to explain it. You know, it didn't have any wings. It didn't have propellers. It didn't have a tail or anything like that, you know. So your mind kind of freezes because you're not understanding what you're looking at. And as it turned heading south, you know, it kind of turned into this white orb ball. Well, you know, by the time, you know, I got my witness out there, you know, hey, take a look at this, you know, it was gone by then. You know, other incidents, I've been seeing these lights in the sky. You know, for instance, I saw one orange amber light on the east side of South Mountain in Mesa in 1999, you know. And, you know, it just, growing up, you're seeing these things all the time. Well, I ended up moving out there to New York, and I was there during 2001, during the 9/11 incident. And I was about 150 miles away from Ground Zero. I was living in a little small town, and there was no fly zones at the time. There wasn't supposed to be anything in the air. So I'm growing up, and I'm a single dad, and so I'm telling my son, you know, hey, you know, there's things in the sky that we just don't really understand yet. You know, I'm like, if you ever seen one, you know, you come and tell your dad, and let's look at it together. Well, during, I think, the third or fourth day of when 9/11 happened, my son's outside playing, and he comes running to the window. Hey, Dad, a UFO. So I go running outside, and I look, and sure enough, man, it's the only way I can describe this is you know, these four silver spheres, and they're connected together. And the best way I can explain this on what it looked like is, you know how the kids' game called Jack, you know, you have the jacks on the ground and you have a rubber ball and you bounce the ball and then you pick up the jacks in your hand? Well, that's what thing kind of looked like. It looked like one of them jacks. It looked like it was a flying jack in the sky. And it was going counterclockwise about 1,000 and a half feet above our heads. And we're all staring at this thing. My son's friend says, oh, that's probably just an airplane or something. I'm like, well, no, dude. I've been around in this earth for many years. I don't think that's an airplane, you know. And it goes over us and it heads towards this park, and another one, another orb seems to appear to the right of it. And it's got this white long tail on it. It's got this red shining front nose to it. And it starts heading towards these jacks. And, you know, the trees got in the way. It looked like it was heading towards the jacks. It looked like it was going to merge with it. Well, you know, every morning I take the kids to school and walk them home from school, and I always reminded them, look, don't ever forget about that. You know, that was something. I don't know what that was. That was something. You know, so that's when I really started to buckle down. You know, look, I'm seeing these things everywhere I go. I'm going to start figuring out what the hell they are. And, you know, I was in the valley in March 13, 1997, when the famous Phoenix lights happened at. And, you know, matter of fact, I was out that night. And, you know, to be honest with you, I didn't see anything flying over the valley. What we did find is, you know, a handful of people did film some lights on the west side of Phoenix, Arizona. So I'm stuck up there in New York, and I'm seeing these lights, you know, and I'm seeing these things in the sky up there. And I'm like, dude, I'm going back home. I'm going back to Phoenix. I'm going to go on a quest. I'm going to go on a hunt. I'm going to figure out what the hell these things are flying in our skies. So in 2004, I arrived back in Phoenix, and I just barely caught a news story of the news helicopter catching some lights, you know, in the original spot where the 1997 lights occurred at, on the west side of Phoenix, Arizona, next to a mountain known today as South Mountain. And so I'm like, hey, now they're here. Now is the time to go check these things out. I bought me a camera. You know, I'm ready. I'm going on the hunt. Now is the time. And I remember a few years ago, there was a guy named Tom King. He was one of the original film videographer at that time in 1997, March 13th, who actually videotaped these lights on the west side of Phoenix. And because, you know, he was ready for these lights. He was a sky watcher. I remember seeing him on the news many a times. But he was over there on the east side in Mesa. That's a city on the east side of Phoenix. And he was catching lights out there on a regular basis. You know, I was seeing him on the news. And so, you know, when the March 13, 1997 event happened, you know, he was out there on the west side filming the lights. And because he was waiting for something. Because he was catching lights nights before. So, you know, he was on guard. He was ready for something. And sure enough, you know, boom, he caught the good video that a lot of us see today. And only, you know, only a handful of people, you know, videotape these lights far across the valley on the west side, you know. And then, you know, how stories seem to exaggerate over the years. You know, especially when people have a news camera in their face, you know, oh, this massive V-craft, you know, ship going 8 miles an hour, mind you, going over the city, and it just went from one area to the next area. And I'm telling you, I was out there. I didn't see nothing, you know. And if a handful of people can videotape something on the west side of the valley, then why couldn't a handful of people videotape a massive craft going 8 miles an hour? You know, I've been studying this for over 20 years now. You know, I've been on the Phoenix lights. I'm one of the best investigators out here in Phoenix, you know, trying to figure out the Phoenix lights, you know, and I have not came across any evidence, any proof of anything going over the valley that night. We have a lot of hearsay, but hearsay can't be credible. It can't be, there's no evidence in hearsay. I go with what I can prove, what I can evaluate, what is in front of me and that I can prove, you know, because, you know, you have to be a believer and a skeptic all at the same time. You just can't go into this business going, oh, everything is paranormal. Oh, everything is UFOs. Oh, everything is a ghost. You know, you have to come to the conclusions. Well, is there a possible explanation for this? You know, if you ruled out all the explanations for something, then it could be considered paranormal or legit, you know, or credible. And so in my opinion, over the many years, over the 20 years of research on the Phoenix lights, I cannot find any proof, positive evidence of anything going over the Valley of the Sun that night. What I did see is credible videos of the lights on the west side of Phoenix, Arizona. That is credible. This is what we can prove because we have a video of this. And so, you know, when this happened in 2004, the lights happened in 2004 in the exact same spot. Instead of, you know, going out there, I decided, you know, well, Tom King was catching them on the east side. I'm going to move out there. And so the whole summer of 2004, I moved out there on the east side of South Mountain. And lo and behold, I was catching these lights almost every night in the Valley of the Sun, right over a major spot by this mountain. And, you know, investigating all this stuff, you know, I'm reading up on books, I'm reading up on texts, you know, and I'm trying to get an answer to what, you know, we're all seeing in the skies. And, you know, a lot of it just didn't make sense to me. And some of the stuff that did make sense to me was the stuff that we read, you know, that has been written down, you know, anywhere from 3,000 to 7,000 years ago. And we'll get into that a little bit later. I'm not sure how much time we have on the show. But, you know, so going into that, you know, I'm like, dude, you know, this is something. These things are hanging around mountains. And lo and behold, you know, doing this investigation, I saw this Indian tour guide from the Pueblo Indian Art Museum in downtown Phoenix. Now, he was doing a tour on South Mountain talking about the petroglyphs left by the Hohokam Indians, the first Native Americans who settled here in the Valley of the Sun. And he worked at the Pueblo Indian Art Museum, and I remember watching him on TV. He was conducting a tour, and one of the people said to him, Now, this stick figure guy appears to be looking up at something above his head, maybe something in the sky. And the Native American turned right around and said, yes, that is some of the interpretations out here, is that our ancestors, you know, could have seen and recorded things they saw in the sky. And I'm like, wait a minute, boom, here we go. That's just a big light bulb on my head. Now, this is 10 years after the massive 1997 Phoenix lights. I mean, when those 10 years has been going on, there's people writing books, there's people doing documentaries, there's people selling movie tickets, you know, over the Phoenix lights, there's news reports. But no one is talking about these petroglyphs out here on the mountains, carved by the first Native Americans around the Valley of the Sun. And, you know, so I was watching that, and I was like, I always kept that in mind. And so, you know, in 2004, I'm filming these lights, you know, right on the east side of South Mountain. And if we have time enough, then we'll go into the reason why they're on the east side. But for now, we'll just go into this. And I call the news, right? You know, because I'm catching them, dude. I'm getting great video of these lights, man. I'm getting triangle formations. I'm getting lightning bolt formations. I'm getting two dots, two massive orange amber lights, you know, just next to each other, you know. They silently would just appear in the sky and hang there for, like, at least 10 to 15 minutes and then quietly go away. I mean, no noise to these things, no shadows. I mean, you wouldn't even know they were there unless you're actually looking for them. And, so, I'm catching these things on a regular basis, and I'm calling the news. And I'm like, hey, is anybody else seeing these lights? I said, I got some great footage of this stuff. And it took them about maybe a few weeks, maybe close to a month, and finally one of the news stations got a hold of me. And we started talking about it. And from there, I ended up doing all of the news channels here, News Channel 3, 13, 12, and Channel 5. I did all the news reports in 2004 in the summer. And the end result to all of this was that we all were seeing flares from an Air Force base in Tucson, Arizona, 150 miles away. Now, this is crazy. This is the exact same cover story as they tried to feed us back in 1997 when they said that the military was conducting flare operations. Well, this is nonsense. These lights are huge orange amber lights. There's no airplanes dropping these things out. Flares make no sense. Flares, you can see the smoke. They're illumination flares. That's the whole purpose to these damn things, is because they light up stuff, which means you can see the smoke. You can see the parachute. These lights stayed in formation. They didn't drift away from each other or fall out of the sky as flares do. And so this was just, you know, BS in my mind. And I'm like, dude, there's got to be, you know, an explanation. This is not flares. And so the more I'm reading, studying about these things, as I told you before, it was some of these old ancient scrolls, you know, that we're talking about these things. And it seemed like the major source, the heart of these beings, of these entities, are mountains. The mountains have everything to do with these entities that we're seeing in the sky. So, you know, I'm still thinking of myself, spaceships, technology, little gray man running around, and I get it too, because, you know, the scientists have found, you know, seven Earth-like type planets on the outskirts of our solar system. And what's the chances of, there's highly intelligent life somewhere out there? And what's the possibilities of them building a spaceship and visiting Earth? Sure, why not? I get it. I'm totally open to that. Matter of fact, I have seen things in the sky that could resemble a craft. So I'm kind of going into that, you know, because at the time, not knowing this, you know, I'm fresh out of the box of this, you know, I'm still going on the reports of a massive boomerang ship went over the city of Phoenix. So I'm still thinking crafts to myself. So the flare incident didn't really go over with me. I decided, you know what, these things like mountains, I'm videotaping these things by the mountain out there. Let's move to the mountain in 2005 and see what we can get. That's exactly what I did. So I moved to South Mountain. I was about a mile radius of this mountain, and I sat there for 3 years. And I was in a perfect location. I mean, I couldn't get any better than that. I mean, my kitchen window was facing the east side of South Mountain. It was beautiful. And, you know, it all started in January, man. Instead, it went from, you know, lights in the sky at nighttime to actually now day sightings. I'm filming these things actually ascending on the mountain. They're coming out of the sky. They're going across the mountain, and they're disappearing within the mountain, it looked like, you know. And then about, you know, half an hour later, they would come out of the mountain about a mile away. And, you know, I'm filming all these things. And then I remember Dave, you know, the Pueblo Indian Art Museum tour guide. So I called him up. I got a hold of him. I didn't tell him who I was. I just told him, look, I'm kind of doing this documentary on the petroglyphs. You know, I was like, can you please take me up there and, you know, let's talk about these glyphs. I would really like to know what your ancestors say about these petroglyphs. He's like, yeah, sure. You know, I was like, okay, cool. So we went up there and we videoed 3 hours out there. And he is going into some crazy things. And one of the things that really joggled my mind was he was talking about these spiral carvings. And he was telling me that these spirals is like looking down into a tunnel, into like a vortex, if you will. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, most of the times, these spirals, they will end at a crack of the boulder, a crack of the stone in which it was carved at. And he was telling me that crack is actually the doorway to the underworld. And, you know, I'm still thinking spaceships, I'm still thinking crafts, and I'm thinking to myself, well, how can a big, you know, mothership get into a crack of the boulder, you know, like that? You know, my mindset is still like that. I'm still thinking technology. And, you know, he goes into the carvings of the lizard men, you know, and he's telling me that these lizard men came up out of the sand world and they taught these people how to live and how to survive. You know, things like that. He's telling me that the circle in the belly is, you know, them emerging out of these doorways from the underworld. And, you know, he's going into the giants. There's giant carvings out there, man. And he's like, you know, well, for instance, you know, these giants were here during the flood. He's like, you see that mountain out there? And he points out to the east side of the valley, the mountain we now know as the Superstition Mountain. And he's like, that mountain there, he's like, was just a small boulder at one time, you know, like just like it was just a normal, you know, huge boulder. And he says that when the flood was coming, the giants was afraid. He said the giants didn't want to drown. So the lead giant told his other giants to run up on that rock, and he was going to save them. So the main giant used his powers, and he raised this boulder up, but the water kept coming. He raised this rock up, and the water kept coming. He raised this rock up until it was huge as the mountain as we see today, but the water kept coming. And at his last bit of strength, because he didn't want his people to drown, he immortalized them by turning them all to stone. And when this happened, that's when the water stopped. And to this day, you can look at this mountain, and you can see all the giants that have been turned to stone up there on top of the mountain, and the lead giant to the bottom right of this mountain, kind of in their praying pose. And then you can see the watermark. You can see the watermark on where the flood had stopped right after the giants got turned to stone. Now, this story goes consistent with pretty much all the stone giants that were turned to stone, you know, as far as Bryce Canyon and some of these other big rock formations where the Native Americans tell you, well, yeah, that was a giant at one time, man, and it was turned stone, you know. And so, yeah, this story goes on not only here in Phoenix, but possibly around the world. And so he's telling me all these neat stories, right? I'm taking it all in, and I'm, you know, evaluating them and all and everything. And you know, I didn't really tell him who I was and what I was really doing until after we got down up the mountain, after he got done telling me the story. And I asked him, I said, are you familiar with the Phoenix Lights? And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, there was somebody on the news a couple months ago talking about them. And I said, yeah, man, that was me. He goes, "That was you?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know." I was like, "I have this theory. I'm working on this theory that these Phoenix lights, these things that we see in the skies today, have something to do with the rock carvings out here on the rocks. You know, we got strange lights in the sky. Now we have strange markings on the rocks out here. You know, that was the whole idea. You know, I needed to find out, you know, exactly what the Native Americans said about this." Well, it was like stepping on a taboo mushroom or something. It was like this was not meant to be talked about. As soon as he figured out what I was doing, he went stone-faced. He shut up. He won't even go on the mountain with me anymore. And, yeah, it got kind of crazy. It was like, nope, this knowledge here, what he explained to me, was not meant to get out to the public. In fact, we're not even supposed to know about these things because of their history. And we'll get into that hopefully if we have enough time. And so, yeah, you know, I ever since then I tried getting him up on the mountain. Nope, he don't want to go. He don't want to go on the mountain with me. Okay, that's fine. Well, at least I got you on videotape, you know, talking to me about this, you know.
So yeah.
At least I got you there, buddy, you know. And so as the days go by and the weeks go by, you know, I'm filming these things, right? And they're not spaceships, man. They're like worms. They're like crooked snakes. They're like flying crosses. They're like diamonds in the sky. They're orbs. They're lights. They're, you know, all these crazy things. And I'm hiking the mountain. I'm familiarizing myself with the landscape out there on South Mountain. You know, I'm investigating the petroglyph. I'm learning the story. I'm understanding how to read them now. I can understand them now. You know, and it came to the conclusion, look, dude, you know, all this story out here carved around the whole Valley of the Sun is not talking about spaceships. I'm not seeing spaceships, man. This is not technology, dude. You know, this is like another animal, another race of entities. You know, this is something completely different, you know. And I matched, you know, many sightings to the petroglyphs. Now, no one has ever done this before. For many, many years, it's been just a theory. Oh, we think the Native Americans were, you know, carving and things that they saw in the sky. But nobody had any proof, man. Well, I did. I successfully matched these things in the sky to the petroglyphs carved on the rocks out there. And once I discovered this, I brought that to the news, and boy, that ate it up, because, you know, this is a whole new story, a whole new chapter on the Phoenix Lights. You know, no one has ever talked about these petroglyphs connected to these UFOs that we see now. You know, no one has ever proved it, you know. Well, that led on to me writing an article for UFO Magazine, and in which I ended up doing the pilot for the UFO Hunter Show, also for the Ancient Aliens TV series. And then later on in 2007, when the show finally aired, the UFO Hunter Show on the History Channel, they decided to come back and do a full story on it, and that was pretty great. And, you know, at that time, you know, no one has actually been, you know, they just really didn't understand this yet, you know. They were saying, now look, dude, if you're going to talk about these things, you need to say craft, okay? You need to say spaceships. You need to say technology, man. You know, he's like, you're filming some bizarre stuff. He's telling me the public is not ready for this, you know? And they're still saying, well, it's Jeff's theory. Bull crap, man. This ain't no theory, man. This is what's really going on here. You know, I matched these glyphs, and I can tell you, man, it's not, you know, the Phoenix, I went from, you know, thinking spaceships, and now I'm doing a 180 going, wait a minute, dude. You know, we see five or six lights out there, man. It's not a cloaked ship. It's not some kind of ship. Each light is the entity, is a living being, okay? They're highly intelligent, man. They know who's watching and who's not watching them, and that's how they're getting away with being in our skies, man. It's because they're, you know, they're actually here and no one's really paying attention because they're looking for spaceships, man. They're looking for craft. And this is how they've been getting away with being in our skies and fooling everybody into thinking that they're flares or they're thinking that they're balloons, you know, because, oh, the people think, you know, we're spaceships, you know, so we can get away with being in our skies, you know, and get away with it. Well, I'm onto them, dude. I figured it out, man. I'm like, dude, this is not spaceship. This is not craft. You know, there could be crafts out there. Sure, I get it. I'm open to it. But this is some kind of new discovery. This is something that hasn't been seen and witnessed, made it in at least 1,000 years. You know, so the more and more I'm out there on South Mountain, the more I'm getting familiar with the landscape, the more I'm understanding the petroglyphs. The petroglyphs are telling me they're describing a dark, dark history here. You know, and I'm finding petroglyphs of the Mayans. You know, I'm finding tombs on South Mountain. You know, I'm finding all this stuff that the archaeologists, even to this day, does not talk about this stuff. And matter of fact, I was on the news with the archaeologist in Phoenix, and he was trying to blow smoke up people's butt like it was just, you know, going haywire, man. And I'm like, dude, how can you say that when the evidence is right here? Look at the photographs that I've discovered. You know, look at the evidence that I've dug up here. What is wrong with you, you know? Until I started, you know, really investigating the CCC, the Civil Conservation Corps. And those were a group of men that were up here during the Depression in the 1930s under the President Roosevelt's New Deal. And so what the city did is they hired a bunch of these guys to live up there on South Mountain, and they were digging mines for gold and things like that, and I think they ended up pulling about $60,000 worth of gold and precious stones out of South Mountain. And sure, they erected ramadas, and they did fireplaces, and they put swing sets up for the kids, and they dug trails, and they also blew up petroglyphs. All right, and that's what really pissed me off about this whole situation, because I'm noticing all these panels that have been blown up with dynamite sticks on it, man. So I'm figuring out what the heck is going on. Why are they blowing up petroglyphs? You know, why are they disturbing these rocks? You know, you didn't blow up a rock over there. That rock is the exact same type of mineral as this rock with petroglyphs on it, and you left that one alone, but you blew the heck out of that one, dude. What's up with that? You know, so I decided to take my investigation to the Phoenix Library in downtown Phoenix, you know, because I'm finding all this stuff, and I really don't have anybody backing me up here. I mean, I'm finding this evidence. I'm finding the tombs. I'm finding Mayan petroglyphs. I'm understanding the stories here. I'm finding altars that's out there in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, same stuff in Mexico I'm finding out here in Phoenix. You know, but I really don't have, you know, any really backing me up on this, because the archaeologist, boy, he wasn't any help. You know, he was like sticking, you know, he was trying to mislead the public, and that just didn't make sense. So I ended up hitting the Phoenix Library to see if I can find some information there, and lo and behold, I did. They directed me to the Arizona room in the downtown Phoenix Library. And so I just asked him, you know, hey, give me the folders. Give me everything you have on South Mountain. Lady comes out, and she pulls out this huge, thick folder, and I opened it up, and bam, there it was. All the information was hitting me in the face. And I'm looking at all this information, and it had the first park ranger of Phoenix, Arizona, from the 1930s to the late 40s. And his name was Charles Holbert. And he was talking about how the mines were here on South Mountain, how the gold and tombs was buried on South Mountain. He talked about the spirits of the earth and sky. He's talking about what happened to the Holcomb Indians, you know, because this is a race of people that were here for 1,000 years, and then one day they just up and disappeared. So the archaeologist wants us all to believe, well, they simply migrated somewhere else. Well, if they did, where did they go? You know, when me and you move, we take our belongings with us. But yet these people didn't. They left everything behind and simply just disappeared. This coincides with the same type of tribes all around the world, where they were there one day and gone the next with no trace. This is exactly what happened to the Holcomb. Matter of fact, Holcomb is a Pima name for the people who are gone, the people who are missing, the people who got taken away. And so he's going into all this information, which he learned all this information from the Indians back in the day, who told him the story. So he was there to protect the tombs on South Mountain. You know, I do tours on South Mountain, and, you know, I conduct tours. I show people how to investigate the petroglyphs. You know, we do UFO sightings and things like that, you know. And, you know, even though Charles Tolbert didn't do UFO sightings, he did conduct tours on South Mountain, and he made these little flyers. And, you know, you can read this flyer now on my website, petroglyphsinthesky.net. You can see some petroglyphs there, and you can see all my information, and you can read up on Charles Tolbert. And that was all the information. Now, this information hasn't been talked about in over 80 years, all right? No one knows about this information. If it wasn't for me digging this up, it would still be concealed away from the public today. But I proved this. I found all this information, and it backs up everything that I had been talking about a year before. And it talked about the Mayans. It talked about the sacrifice. It talked about what happened to these people. It talks about the spirits of the earth and the sky. It even talked about on what this mountain name really is, and it is called Mount Sapoa, Mountain of Mercy. This is a sacred mountain. This is a holy mountain. Tribes from all over the place used to gather here at this sacred spot and watch these spirits, watch these phoenix lights, watch these entities, watch the Quetzalcoatl, the flying serpent, watch these diamonds and these crazy things that we now see in the skies today. They were all worshiping these beings as gods. And these things are just incredible and magical. And, you know, he talked about, you know, when the Hohokams first arrived here, and it wasn't always a dried-up desert as we see it now. It wasn't all laid waste in a desolate land and dirty as it is now. It was clearly a tropical-like landscape back in the day when the Hohokams were here. And when they arrived here in this valley, the story says that they didn't know how to live. So these spirits came down out of the sky and came up from the ground, and they taught these people on how to survive. In return, they worshiped these beings as gods. They performed sacrifice to them. From there, it bore giants, and the story goes on and on and on. And it's really intriguing because some of these biblical scrolls we can read, you know, if we get rid of religion and look at some of these scrolls as a type of history book, you know, it tells you what these things are. It tells you how these things were here on Earth. It tells you that this is their planet also. They're not from Alpha Centauri, but they actually live here. They've always been here. The Native Americans have always, you know, said this, the spirits are on the mountain. Well, they're talking about the phoenix lights. They're talking about these creatures that are within the mountains out here. This is all true. And so they're worshiping these things as God. And they were peace-loving people, supposedly, for 1,000 years. They were masters of the canal systems in the world. They built the best canal systems ever at that time. And they were happy, and they worshiped the phoenix lights. They performed sacrifice. This went on for 1,000 years until somebody decided that the sacrificing must end. And when the sacrificing stopped, it upsetted these beings. These beings got upset about it. And that's when the land started to dry up, started to gain weight. And everybody knew that, you know, we were wrong. We should have never stopped the sacrifice. Look how the land is becoming. All the water from the waterfalls on the mountain is drying up. There is no water here now. It's all going to wasteland. And then all of a sudden, some say that the devil came from the east and took these people away. Now, there were survivors to this Holocaust. They were witnessing what was going on. They witnessed these lights, these entities, these flying serpents picking people up and taking them up into the sky. And they were afraid. They were terrified. So they ran into the cave. And when it was all over, they knew that it was wrong to stop the sacrifice. And the leaders of that time, the white man called them the chiefs, committed suicide on the sacrificing altar. And the rest of the people gathered up the gold. And the story says on this gold that it was as tall as the highest saguaro cactus and as big and round as the sun in the sky. And they buried all this gold in the mountains on South Mountain, on this holy mountain, Mount Sapoa. And they vowed never to come back to this valley because they knew if they were going to live here, then eventually they would have to go back to war with these spirits of the earth and sky. They were afraid, so they went back to the homeland, back to Mexico. And for 400 years, nobody lived in this desolate wasteland. There were tribes on the outskirts of Phoenix, Arizona, and they saw the light. They saw the Phoenix light. They saw these serpents. They saw these orbs, and they were afraid. And rightly, they should be because, you know, they were told. They were witness to what happened to their people. And this was told from generation to generation to generation to the generation that we have now, where my friend, you know, from the Pueblo Indian Art Museum, when I told him, look, I'm seeing these spirits in the sky again. I'm recording them. I'm matching them to the glyphs. Oh, he don't want to talk about it now. He's afraid. Why? Because his grandparents and his grandparents and his grand-grandparents, you know, this was the story on what really took place here. And so, you know, I'm going into this and I'm thinking, wow, man, you know, I'm making a complete 180 on this whole situation here. You know, I'm going in thinking, oh, my God, these UFOs are here to help us. And I'm coming out saying, uh-oh, wait a minute. You know, this is something different here. No wonder the government isn't talking about these things. And there are people who know about these things. Matter of fact, for a couple points I'd like to make, you know, in 2004, I'm videotaping these lights, you know. And after I made the news, I noticed that these white Cessna airplanes, these little white airplanes, right, they were watching the lights too. I videotaped all this. I documented all this. These airplanes were circling high up in the sky, and as soon as these lights would appear, these airplanes would zoom in after these lights. And within a mile radius of these lights would disappear. Airplanes would come in and circle that area for like 15 minutes. Airplanes would go back high in the sky and circle and wait. Here come those lights again. It was a cat-and-mouse game the whole summer of 2004. And when I made the news, not only were those airplanes watching the lights, but now they're watching me now. I noticed that when I was leaving to go out to the school, I went out to Mesa Community College. I climbed up a set of bleachers that I could see the whole Valley of the Sun, the whole city. And this was, you know, the bleachers where they played football games and had track meets and things like this. So these bleachers were high. They were above the trees. I could see the mountain. It was a perfect spot for sky watching, you know. And so every night, every evening, you know, this airplane would circle my house, circle my apartment, and follow us all the way to the mountain, all the way to the Mesa Community College. And, you know, sometimes, and watch us set up. I get my tripod set up. I'm getting ready, sundown. And this airplane would zoom sometimes real close to me where I could see the pilot, you know. So now those airplanes, because I made the news, found out where I'm sitting at, where I'm watching it at, and they can't do anything about it, you know. They're not going to stop me, you know. Matter of fact, I had some cops called on me one night because me and my son's out there by ourselves, like 10 o'clock at night, you know. So some guy out there with a video camera, you know, just kind of looks suspicious, right? So the cops are called on me, and they ambushed me up there on the stairs, and they're like, dude, what are you doing? What are you doing? And you know, it's a good thing I had photographs of these lights, and I showed the cops the photographs. I'm like, dude, you see right out here? This is what I'm doing. I'm videotaping these lights. And by the time, you know, the cops are going away, they're bragging to each other. Oh, wow, did you see those? Yeah, those are pretty good photographs, you know. So the cops left me alone. Everybody ended up, you know. And then so in 2005, when I moved to the mountain, and you know, after I make the news, right, because there's a big canyon, a big crevice out there on South Mountain, and there's some petroglyphs there. Now, the rumors on these petroglyphs is some of these glyphs has the power to invoke these spirits. And I accidentally did this one day. My son and I was up there. We're on this cliff overlooking this canyon, and there was some petroglyphs carved in this canyon, some spiral doorways and some other what the archaeologist likes to call anthropomorph wear designs and things like that. And I said, you know, I haven't seen you guys in a while. You guys are cool. Why don't you come and see us? Well, about 3 mornings later, I'm getting my son ready for school. I got my camera out the window. I'm watching the mountain. And lo and behold, this huge snake-looking thing, this flying serpent, this red and black flying serpent came out of that canyon. It climbed 1,000 feet. It turned. It came right over to the apartment complex, and it sat there. I'm videotaping this whole thing. And so, you know, I'm getting my kid ready to go, and I'm like, dude, I'm going out to the parking lot, you know, because it's right there. You know, if I go out to the parking lot, I can get a better shot of this thing because it's right there, you know, covered and above the parking lot. So, you know, I'm telling my kid, okay, you know, you're going to have to walk yourself to the bus stop because I'm filming this thing, right? And so he's walking away, and this thing kind of, I mean, it's up there shape-shifting. And that's what the Indians tell you, that these things are shape-shifters. They like to take the shapes of animals. They like to take the shapes of deers and humans and snakes and things like that. And that's what this thing was doing, man. It was shape-shifting into a snake, then a cross, then a snake. And as my son's walking away, you know, it looks at my son, then it kind of looks back at me, and it looks back at my son. And then all of a sudden, I'm hearing airplanes. Here come two white Cessna airplanes. Those things are loud.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as they started getting close to that serpent in the sky, that serpent started to move. It got the heck out of Dodge. It went over the Valley of the Sun into another mountain known as Camelback Mountain. Well, that was incredible.
Uh-huh.
That was great video footage, and I took that to the news, and they aired that on the news. And a few days after that, now instead of white Cessna airplanes, I'm dealing with black helicopters now. And this black helicopter went over South Mountain, and he stopped. I was the only one that knew where this serpent came out of. I was the only one that witnessed where this canyon was located at, where this thing came out of. And this helicopter went to that area 3 times. So at the, you know, this was like close to a little bit, almost a year. And within that year, I'm watching at least 3 or 4 doorways, spiral doorways that are carved out there on the mountain where I, you know, successfully videotape these things coming and going from. And so this black helicopter, when he would leave that area, he would go to that one doorway, he would go over to the next doorway, he would go over to that other doorway that I'm watching. And then he went over to some other doorways that I had no clue about, you know. And then he'd cruise across the mountain again, and then he would stop right there at that canyon again. He did this 3 times. There was even I videotaped all this. I've documented this. He even like stopped and was looking right at my window. There's a lot of videos
wow.
I have that these black helicopters would just fly right over my window, right? And like minutes later, one of these entities would leave the mountain, you know? And, you know, so after a while, you know, I'm going back to what Dave was telling me, the Native American, and he's saying, you know, they're going into the underworld. You know, these spirals are doorways, you know, and the spirals going clockwise, they're, it's a doorway in. And a spiral going counterclockwise is a doorway out. If the spiral is ending down, then, you know, it might be going into that crack or crevice of the boulder on which it's carved on, or it could represent the ground, that they're coming up out of the ground. If the spiral ends up, then we're talking about like a doorway in the sky, like a vortex or something like that, where these things just magically appear in the sky, much like what the Phoenix Lights do. They're there one minute and then gone the next. You know, so there's a vortex in the sky. So, you know, watching these things, you know, for the first year, it was great. I documented these things, you know, almost on a regular basis. I noticed that some months they were really heavy. There was a lot there. And then other months they were gone. And this coincided with the equinox and the solstice. Now, these Ho'okam Indians, they were sky watchers also. And they constructed these petroglyphs and these boulders in such a way to orient the morning sunrise and the morning sunset. And they would stack these huge boulders on these other boulders in which the equinox and the solstice, it would cast this shadow through these spirals or through these anthropomorph shapeshifter entities carved on the rocks there. Now, the archaeologist wants us to believe, well, these interpretations, these equinox and solstice markers are just letting the Indians know that it's time to plant corn, it's changing of the seasons. That's bull crap, man. They don't care about planting corn. They're watching for these entities. They're watching for these phoenix lights. They're watching for these spirits of the sky. It has everything to do with the spirits of the sky. That's what these petroglyphs are talking about. And I noticed that, you know, during the equinox, they were heavy. And after the equinox, they were kind of gone. And then during the solstice, you know, right before the solstice, they came back. You know, so that first year, I'm documenting the certain times, the certain months. The second year, it repeated itself. The third year, it repeated itself. That was the secret. It was a pattern. It was a pattern that these things follow. You know, they're tracking the sun. They're following the sun. Okay, so I'm starting to think to myself, all right, so what are mountains? What makes these mountains so special? Well, let's look at it at a scientific basis here. Well, these mountains out here in the Valley of the Sun, especially South Mountain, Mount Sapoa, was created by a fault line. And these fault lines generate energy. And that's exactly what these things, in my opinion, seem to be going after. Because here we go. In 2004, I told you that I'm filming these lights on the east side of South Mountain. There's a reason for this. And that is because there's a major power plant. There's a power plant that's boiled down into the fault line on the east side of South Mountain. And that's where these lights were hanging above. Now, during the summer, that power plant was active. And these entity lights, these phoenix lights, were directly over that power plant, absorbing the energy. You know, a lot of people are asking me, well, why do these crafts have lights on them? Why do these, you know, these spaceships need lights? Do they need headlights to see where they're going? No, man, that's not it at all. You know, just as the firefly and the lightning bug, you know, how they light up, that's exactly what these beams do. They light up, okay, especially when they're absorbing the energy. They're absorbing all this energy. They're lighting up, man. They're fueling up. They're gassing up on this energy, right? You know, and so they're basically coming and going into these areas around the world where it draws major energy sources at. To the Indians, they're going into the underworld. On a scientific basis, they're going into the energy spots or the fault lines to absorb their energy. And they're following the sun. So when the sun gets in the right position of these energy spots, it acts like it opens up these doorways, right? It opens up like a type of fusion effect. And it attracts these beings to these energy sources. So when the sun is aligned with these fault lines, aligned with these energy sources, these entities are drawn to that area. And then afterwards, as the sun or as the earth rotates around the sun and the sun moves across the sky and certain times of the season, the sun moves, so do these entities. The sun moves over these other energy spots around the world, so these things during the equinox and the solstice and things like that, the changing of the season, these entities are following this energy source. This is the reason why, like, in Arizona, we'll see, like, a mass UFO sighting, right before the equinox. And then after the equinox, they're kind of gone. But they're gone from there. They're just appearing over there in maybe Iraq or Florida or Jerusalem or Paris, you know. And then after the equinox, they're back over here now, you know, because they're following that energy source. You know, it's all a pattern. A lot of people haven't found this out yet because they haven't done the extensive investigation of as I have over the many years, over the 20 years, you know, watching these things and trying to figure them out. You know, I believe I found out the pattern. And once you understand the pattern and understand what's really going on, you know, that's when you know on how to predict when these things are going to come back. You know, in a way, I'm light years ahead of some of these other sky watchers, you know, and that's what kind of the History Channel was trying to tell me, that the people just weren't ready for this stuff yet, man. And but I proved it. I documented it all. It's not hearsay. It's all proven facts from the first park ranger of Phoenix, Arizona, to the tombs and the photographs, you know, and the park ranger talking about the tombs on South Mountain, talking about not crafts. You know, not in any way, shape, or form have I ever seen a petroglyph out here depicting a spaceship or a craft. That's not it at all, man. It's depicting these entities, these living beings, all right? And that's what we're dealing with here. You know, like in the beginning, you know, I mentioned that these lizard petroglyph markings, these lizard men, had this circular belly, right? And Dave, was the Native American, was trying to tell me that, it, you know, he's, that's representing him halfway in the underworld, halfway into our world. Well, I kind of beg to differ now. Watching these things and watching them shape-shift in the sky and transform, you know, and actually seeing what they've done, what they do in the sky, I believe that that orb, that, that circle that we're seeing today is the circular body on this lizard man petroglyph. And what he's doing, he's morphing into a man. So first he's that orb that we're all seeing today, the phoenix lights, the orbs in the sky, and he's changing, man. He's morphing. The archaeologists like to say they're anthropomorphing. They're changing shape, and they're changing into a man to try to look like humans, man. And that, and they're growing this tail, but that tail actually is something. It's not really a tail. It's a line, and I, we'll get into that later if we got time. But they're actually shape-shifting. Now, I documented this one year, a couple years ago. My wife and I was out there on South Mountain. We're skywatching, right? And all of a sudden, there was a light. There was a light in the sky. And I started recording. And out from this light came this black serpent. It looked exactly like what we see in Quetzalcoatl, some of the feathered serpent in Mexico. Well, that's what this thing looked like. It came out of this light. It came out of the vortex. It came out of the door in the sky. And it moved across the sky. On my website, you can see this. You can see the photographs of it. And then it changed. It shape-shifted into what looked like a stick-figure man. And it looked like he's got this hand on his waist, and he's got this head on him, and he's got like two horns coming out on top of his head. And he just went across the mountain like that. I filmed and documented all that. It was just amazing on what we filmed. And that's exactly what we're dealing with here, is these petroglyphs in the sky. And this is the reason why I call my research Petroglyphs in the Sky, is because I verified it. This is what I believe that we're seeing, is these petroglyphs are in the sky now. So it's all been documented. It's not hearsay. It's proven facts. And, you know, I'm light years ahead of people in my field. And I am the real deal. I don't say anything that I can't prove. And I'm telling you, this is what we're really dealing with here. And I've done many, many cable shows over the years. I did the History Channel. I've done True TV. Matter of fact, I'm working with the Travel Channel now. They want to use some of my videos in their new up-and-coming UFO show. So start looking for my videos in that. So, yeah, awesome. I'm the real deal. This is all neat stuff. It's real stuff. It's verified stuff. And you can check it out on my website, petroglyphsinthesky.net. I have a book out. Now, my first book, it talks about the lost history of Phoenix, Arizona. It talks about the Ho'okam. It brings the reader into this magical type journey to understand what Phoenix really is, what this Valley of the Sun, the history really is. It explains on how to read the petroglyphs. It talks about the Mayans and the tombs and the giants. There's tons of photographs proving this. It talks about the first park ranger. And so it goes into what, you know, the lost history of Phoenix is. That explains on exactly what the Phoenix Lights is. You know, the Phoenix Lights isn't some spaceship, you know, from Alpha Centauri. You know, this is their home, too. A lot of people don't realize this. These lights, these beings, this is their home also. When we read some of these scrolls, you know, as far as the Babylonian scrolls, when it comes to the Anunnaki and things like this, it tells us, dude. It tells us that some stayed and some left. All right, they're probably on another world eating up the energy over there. And what, about another 6,000 years are going to return? Some say they're going to they're on their way now, you know. And that seems to coexist on a lot of these ancient scrolls. When it tells you what these things are. You know, it's fascinating. For instance, Genesis 6. We can read Genesis 6 and how it tells us that these things were cast down. Well, that's what the petroglyphs depict. And it depicts, it tells us about the giant. Well, that's what we have out here carved on the rocks. We have giants. We have evidence of the giants. I found a wall out there that is that one side of the wall has been blown up, but the other side, you can clearly see that these are huge, massive boulders been stacked up on top of each other, constructing this wall. And there's no way the Holocoms had a crane system back then. I mean, somebody big and powerful must have picked up these boulders and placed them to make this wall. You know, so we have the evidence of the giants. So it's fascinating. We can go read some of these ancient scrolls, you know, that has been written anywhere from 3,000 to 6,000 years ago. And then we can go out on the rocks and we can see the prehistoric photographs of the exact same story, okay? The petroglyphs on the rocks talk about what we read in biblical scrolls. Just take religion out of these biblical scrolls and look at it and read it at face value and look at it as the history of the world. It tells you what these things are. It tells you that these things have been with us since the beginning of man, especially in Genesis 6 and then, you know, the book of Numbers. The book of Exodus, you know, I mean, heck, Moses followed a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, man, and they followed this thing in the desert for 40 years, you know, and it says that sometimes this thing would stop motionless in the sky for a year, and the people would, you know, wait for that thing in the sky to move, and when it moved, well, it was time to go. And what happened to Moses? You know, he got taken away on a mountain by a phoenix light, by a light that came down from heaven and ascended on the mountain, right? And it wasn't Moses or anybody leading his people into the promised land. It was that thing in the sky. So it tells us, man, it tells you what these UFOs are today that we're seeing today. And in my opinion, it's all biblical. It's biblical stuff. It's verified carvings on the rocks out there. And that's what we're really dealing with here. You know, and a lot of scholars, they don't want to look at this yet. You know, they're still into little gray guys running around and, you know, Alpha Centauri and being abducted and all this crazy stuff. And that's all fine and dandy. You know, that's all good. That's great that they're, but there's no proof of that. We can't verify this. I go with what can be proven. And what can be proven are scrolls that we can verify that are at least 3,000 to 6,000 years old. We can verify the petroglyphs on the mountain talking about the same story that we read in the scrolls. And we can see for our own damn selves the things in the sky. So that's proof enough to me. That's credible evidence. And that's what I go on, not hearsay.
That's
what
awesome.
I can prove. Well, yeah, and over, you know, the last, you know, over the 20 years of research I've done into this and continue to do into this, you know, this is the pattern that I'm looking at. This is the way, this is the direction that this investigation for me has gone with. You know, I started going this one direction, and then all of a sudden I had to turn because the evidence made me turn that way. It made me look at this in a completely different way. It made me look at this, what I can prove, what I verified, what I saw for myself, what I documented. And, you know, so if you can't get to the mountain, then I bring the mountain to you. And, you know, and the problem with this, with a lot of these researchers and some of these people is they're out to make a quick buck. You know, they're out to make money off these things. And I don't. All the book sales that I generate and everything that I – all the money that I make from this, it's donated to the foster kids in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm not out to make money. I'm out to bring the evidence, the truth on what the Phoenix Lights is to the public. I'm bringing you facts here. I want the public, don't just take my word for it. Go out there and investigate this stuff for yourself. Do what I did over the last 20 years. Investigate these things on yourself. Don't just take the word of somebody else, man. You need to go out there and have an open mind to these things. And if you've got a mountain, you know, out there where you live at, and there's petroglyphs and it has spirals on it, and strange carvings of anthropomorphs and these weird animals and things, that's where you need to start. Find out the history of your land. Find out the petroglyphs there. Investigate. That's how we're going to get this information out to the world. Because don't rely on the government. The government will never admit what's going on here. They might tell you, yeah, okay, because they're now admitting, oh, yeah, there's something here. But they always do that. They always say, oh, there's something here, and then they shut up. They never talk about it. You know why? Because this is a scary thing. If these things were here to cure cancer, if these things were here to help us, the government would be all over this. All these aliens are here to help us. No, man, they're not. They're keeping quiet. Why? Because look at the history. Look at the history. Look at what the Indians say. For instance, the Hopis say that we're in the fourth world and we're about ready to enter the fifth. Okay? And each time the world changes, each time the man starts over again, these things are here in the sky and on the ground to lead these people, to mislead them, actually, into thinking one way. And that's what these things are doing. That's why, they're just watchers in the sky. We read these biblical scrolls when they say they're watchers. Yeah, they're waiting. Now, some are good and some are bad, and there are stories where there was a war between the good ones and the bad ones, and humans were their prize. And, yes, I did find petroglyphs out there depicting some kind of war that was going on here with these entities, these good ones and the bad ones. And I did find petroglyphs of these six-figure Indian men shooting bows and arrows at these flying serpents. So, yeah, there is some credibility here. The stories of this type of alien or angel war can be verified through the petroglyphs,
Awesome.
So that's exactly what's going on here. And no one really knows for sure when the fourth world will end and the fifth world will begin. Not even these entities in the sky, but they know that it's getting closer. I mean, look at the world today. Look at all the prophecies lately that has been coming, true, especially this last one, this huge plague that's hitting the earth. Look at that. If this isn't a prophecy, this is a very good example that we're at the end of days here, because of this plague that we're dealing with now and today. And, these entities are waiting. They're watching. And it really seems that, as soon as mankind starts to war with each other, especially look at back at World War II, man, they're chasing these Foo Fighters around in the sky. They're thinking, oh, it's some kind of new technology from the enemy. But, like 30 years later, they just now come to find out that it wasn't, enemy technology, that it was something else. And, President Reagan said it in his speech, what if we were invaded from an outer space thing or something not of this world, wouldn't the nations of the world unite? So he's trying to tell them there. He's trying to tell you, look, there is something here, but that's about as far as they're going to go with it. They're never going to tell you exactly what these things are doing here. If they actually did, if they came out and said, hey, these Phoenix Lights are out there in this valley, and look at the history that we just talked about, and that's the truth, and that's what's going on. How many people would still be living in that valley today? They would be afraid, man. They'd skedaddle, just like what the survivors did in that last quote-unquote rapture. They were taken away. Well, that's exactly what's going to happen here. There's going to be this massive war. There's going to be this massive thing. And, two-thirds of the world will be destroyed. The people that live at this time, live after this Holocaust, they're going to see these Phoenix Lights. They're going to see these entities in the sky. And one's going to change. He's going to morph. The archaeologist, here we go. He's going to anthropomorph into a man. He's going to land. He's going to say, look what I can do for you. I can clean up the air. I can clean up the water. I can give you food. In return, worship me. Look at all these miracles and look at what my angels can do for you. I am the Messiah. I am the one here to save you. And it's going to start all over again.
Awesome.
It's crazy.
That's a lot of stuff. And I can see you're going from point to point and you're touching on stuff that I know about, and I can see the gaps filling in there. So everything's kind of linking, and it totally makes sense. I mean, I follow this stuff myself, and I see a lot of the connections you're talking about, like the flying squiggly line thing, the worm-looking thing. I've seen that before. So I know what you're talking about.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's like, okay, it's still a UFO. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of flying worm. I mean, it's not a ship, because how would you steal something like that? So it makes sense. I totally agree that.
Yeah.
Well,
so everybody, back then, I'm bringing this information. I'm bringing all these facts up. Like I said, I'm 180. I, instead of spaceships, now I'm talking entities. I'm talking angels. I'm talking Nephilim. I'm talking fallen angels. I'm talking, you know, this stuff. And then, you know, the public, they don't want to hear about this, or the other people in this field, you know, oh, he's trying to be another prophet Yahweh. You know, he's trying to be, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So he must be filming balloon. He must be filming flares. You know, they're all trying to disregard me. You know, all these people on the internet, you know, with the CGI stuff of crafts and things like that, you know, that's what's polluting what's really going on here. You know, that's the reason why people think, you know, that they're looking for a spaceship when it's all CGI crap stuff. You know, I haven't found one evidence in my research of proof of a craft. You know, and these people, they film these lights, they think it's a spaceship. You know, and they haven't really made the conclusion that wait a minute, what if it's not a craft? What if it's a living entity? You know, what if it's another animal? Just as man is higher than the animals on the earth today, these things are higher than man. Okay, so they can come in and out of dimensions. You know, they're like a miracle. Okay, they're supernatural, if you want to look at it that way. They're not anything, you know, that we're used to, you know, because we're thinking flesh and blood and that's what the lies here, you know, but not. It's something completely different, something that, you know, the scientists are not looking at it and not admitting stuff that the history books are not telling us. But yet, when you really look at the evidence, when you really examine the facts, and you look at the world's history, you will learn that these things have always been here. And every generation of people who have dealt with these things tell you about these things, man. They do it the best they can, either from scrolls hiding in caves as far as the seams and the Dead Sea Scrolls, to the Native Americans carving these things on the rocks, showing you photographs, man, pictures of what they were dealing with. And that's what we're dealing with here. You know, that's the exact same thing that we are seeing in the skies today. You know, And so you'll learn that, you know, these things have always been here. These things is like a type of animal, if you will. This is their world too. This is where they live. And, you know, in a way, they have rules too that they have to abide. You know, they can't just come down and break the rules. That's my opinion. You know, that's just my opinion that,
yeah,
there's rules that they have to go upon. Or they would already be down here saying, look, dude, worship us already. You know, so there's some kind of something stopping them from doing it. So there must be some kind of rule. You know, they're not allowed to until we need them again. Until mankind is ignorant enough to believe that this is our God and for us to worship them, you know, like we did in the beginning. You know, so it was at the time in the beginning, so it will be at the time in the end. Okay, so, you know, in the beginning, people needed these things to survive. You know, the Hopis go on to say that Spider Woman, you know, taught them how to weave their baskets by watching Spider Woman weave her web in the sky. And that's how they were able to weave their baskets. You know, well, I videotaped this type of entity that looked like a spider flying by my window, man. It made video of the day on News Channel 3, and it was great. And that thing actually looked like it had lizard skin on it. And that was crazy. You can find it on my website. It's called the Spider UFO. It's crazy. And so, yeah, you know, these things have always been with us. And as we get closer, more and more closer to the end, we should expect to see more and more and more of them. That's the reason why we're starting to see a lot of them in the skies. And that's probably the reason why, you know, the government, the Pentagon, came out and says, hey, you know, you know, they filmed that damn thing, what, a few years ago, and they're just now coming out saying that they filmed it. You know, at least they're admitting that, yeah, there's something here, but they're never going to tell us, you know, what they are. I mean, they would rather leave it a mystery and things like that.
Yeah. Jeff, we have come to the end of the show. We're going to have to wrap. For those of you who have been listening, you listen to My Darkest Hour. My guest tonight is Jeff Woolwine. And we're talking about UFOs, and this is one of those subjects that we can go on and on for hours. He's investigated some great stuff and put a lot of facts together. You can find his stuff at petroglyphsinthesky.com, and I put a link for his YouTube page. You can just look up Petroglyphs in the Sky, one word on YouTube, and that'll bring up endless videos and some great evidence. Can you tell the people who are listening how they can find your book or maybe get a little more information from you?
Yeah, you know, it's petroglyphsonthesky.net. .com is no longer available anymore. It's .net. And I do have a new YouTube page. It's called The Phoenix Lights Petroglyphs in the Sky. And there you can see some new sightings. And you can get a hold of me on Facebook, Jeff Woolwine, Petroglyphs in the Sky. And every Saturday night I do a live show. I do my own live show. And we talk about the petroglyphs and we talk about, you know, the Phoenix Lights. We, you know, I ask the audience, you know, if you have any petroglyphs or any UFOs, you know, please email me and I'll take a look at it. We can talk about it on the show, things like that. And from there, you know, you can get my book. It's called Phoenix Lights, Petroglyphs in the Sky, True Stories, Myths, Legends, and UFOs Over Phoenix, Volume 1. You can find that on Barnes & Noble. You can find it on eBay. You can get eBooks and things like that. And there's links on my website to petroglyphsinthesky.net. And there you can find out, you know, the history of Phoenix, Arizona, Charles Holbrook. You can see some of the photographs of the tomb. And the book actually goes into more documents, more photographs, more understanding on how to read the petroglyphs, and what exactly the Phoenix Lights is. So, yeah, you know, hit me up on Facebook. You can find me there, Petroglyphs in the Sky. Check out my my live show. And, you know, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate that.
It's been awesome. I mean, unfortunately, we've gone so far, and there's so much more we can talk about. So, obviously, we're going to have to get you on the calendar again so we can continue this conversation, because there's a lot of things that make a lot of sense, and it's great to know more. So, thank you for joining us.
That sounds great. You know, whenever you would like to do a volume two, just hit me up and let's get it going.
All right, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
All right. Good night, man. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. All right. That's going to be it tonight for everybody listening out there. You've been listening to Mike Darkest Hour Radio. I am your host, Stefan Brigati. We've had our guest, Jeff Woolwine, who was a videographer. He's been watching the UFOs and dug into a lot of history. So definitely check his book out. Check out his video page. You know, like you said, you can hit him up on Facebook if you have any questions. Or maybe if you want to just send some video to him or whatever, and have him check it out. I'm sure he'll be glad to answer those questions for you. So that's going to be it for me tonight. Thanks to everybody out at LivePanel.com, History FM Radio, Stitcher, all the places that we're streaming live to. It just goes on and on and on, and we're expanding, which is great. So we'll be talking to you guys. Do you want to give a shout out to my sponsors real quick? Chili Man Salsa, making that paranormally hot chili. That's Chilliman. Salsa Company. Go ahead and check it out. Also want to give a shout out to Paranormal Tech, P-Tech, paranormal equipment that we use in our investigations. And also to Lizzie Withy's Crafty Creations, making those nice warm clothing for us getting through those wet, nasty, and cold asylums. So that's going to be it, and we'll see you guys soon. And we'll be doing a live broadcast from the few upcoming events once the cities get back on track and open up again. I know I'm going to be at the Virginia City 10th Annual Paracon as well, and we'll keep you guys updated on that. So that's going to be it for tonight, and we will talk to you guys soon. Good night.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox Sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and
you are listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.